Hey, hello there. Welcome back to the Trading Desk with myself, Josh Thanos, and Jason May. Hey, guys. Appreciate you meeting up with us again this week. And we got a good show for you this week. I think last week's show was fun. We did the fake comparison, the PAM 441. Got some good feedback on that. That was fun. And so this week we want to do something a little bit different too. We're not going to be talking so much about the market on watches specifically, and more about kind of collecting certain different types of watches, and we'll get into that in a second. So let's start with a wrist check.
You go first this time.
All right, cool, man. So I got something that I didn't think I would ever own. I used to make fun of people who own these and never really understood them, and I still really don't, but I'm getting to. And let's go ahead and get a nice wrist shot. Can you zoom in there? Hey, look at that. So, if you're not familiar with this is a Seiko watch, right? And this is a Seiko Turtle, what they call a black turtle. It's a special edition watch. And so this one is a special edition. I think they made 1,930 or so, some odd, of this one specifically. And I received this watch on Monday. I have not taken it off since. I'm obsessed with it. So a little on the lower end of what I own. Here, let's get another zoom in there. Awesome. So Jason, you have one of these also, don't you? Or something similar, don't you?
I do, the exact.
And you're wearing it today.
Same case. I wore it today so we could highlight your new obsession.
Yeah. This thing is amazing, by the way, guys.
Yeah, we've talked about this watch before. Josh is now starting to come around with the idea of what this should be. So,
oh my God, this thing is so right now I can't tell you that I've ever worn a more comfortable watch, which is kind of weird to say. And again, like I haven't been able to take the watch off. In fact, I wore this to bed the other day, which is something I've never done before.
Really?
So there you go. My Seiko obsession has begun. Compliments of my friend Shelby. Thank you so much, Shelby. And I don't know. I'm totally obsessed with this watch. So, Jason, what do you got?
I'm going to go ahead and scoop by our representation of Tim on our show. We tried to balance the glasses on top.
Didn't stay.
So this is also another Turtle. This is my Paddy Diver. I've had this for, I don't know, 8 months now?
Have
9
you?
Months?
Yeah.
Probably a year at this point. I don't know. It's time's relative. Great watch. I took this off the bracelet. It's been on a NATO its whole life. Same exact case as Josh's, stainless steel as opposed to the PVD, and then red and blue, which is nicer than the black. But I do like the dark turtle, and as soon as Josh gets tired of that, I'll probably steal it from him.
I've seen it being called the Ninja Turtle.
Yeah.
And I started doing research on this thing, and apparently it's this is very desirable. It's got the faded indices.
Yeah.
It's got a bright yellow. They call it the Ninja Turtle, which that's my favorite nickname for this watch. I mean, when you look at the watch off the wrist, it doesn't seem like it's something that would be super comfortable. It's so unbelievably comfortable. It's ridiculous. 45mm case, but really, it wears like a 41.
Yeah. Offset crown.
Right.
Right. Turtle case, so very comfortable. Relatively lightweight for what it is.
Right.
Automatic movement. Day-date. Incredible loom, like loom for days.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much indestructible. Like I told Josh, like you will bang this thing at night, think you destroyed the watch, look down, the watch would be perfect. So, yeah, man.
It's got a longer power reserve than my Panerai.
Not my first Seiko, but that is your first Seiko.
Yes.
And guarantee it won't be
your
last.
Won't be my last. No, I've been looking at Seikos to buy this all week. I think this one had a $400-some-odd original price tag. You see them trading for more than that. And that'll kind of lead us into what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man, so I'm totally smitten, like obsessed with this thing. Didn't feel like I would be. Again, once I put it on my wrist, I have not been able to take it off.
Right.
So there you go. That's our wrist check. So let's go right into this or that. Boom. All right. Jason, you pick first this week, so you go first this week.
All right. So what I wanted to do was just kind of pick a watch that I've always liked and I've always thought about buying. I think this watch represents a tremendous value proposition, and it's kind of cool because it's not your common Tudor. So my pick for this week was the Tudor Advisor, specifically this cognac dial version, which is my favorite of the three. Silver's a little boring, black's cool, but you own it. You know, black and stainless steel is very common.
Yeah.
The cognac dial for me, it looks good in these photos, but in person really comes to life. Multi-dimensional dial. So what you have here is a 42mm overall case. A lot of people don't realize the mid section of this watch is titanium. And the reason why it's titanium is because this watch is an alarm. as well. And the titanium gives the alarm some sound with a better vibration through the alloy. So you have a power reserve, pointer day, calendar, on-off window, 42-millimeter titanium and stainless steel alarm watch. And, I mean, you can have that watch for like $4,000.
Yours is 42 also, right?
42 millimeter.
Okay, cool. So, by the way, guys, for anybody who hasn't watched this show before, This or That is a segment where we each pick a watch, we go ahead and sell it based on what we like, and then you guys decide who wins. Not often do I win. I feel like I will win tonight, though. I feel like I've picked the superior watch, even though the Tudor is nice. A big fan of alarm watches. If you ever watch any of my older shows with Tim, that's kind of my favorite complication is an alarm besides a GMT. And just so happens, my watch is an alarm and a GMT. So this is a Panerai 98. It's a 42-millimeter traditional radio mirror case. This watch is going to be being sold originally on a leather strap, but you can put this on any type of strap. I've put a rubber strap on my radio mirrors in the past. I don't have a radio mirror in my collection currently, but in the past I have put a radio mirror on a rubber strap. It works very well. So this watch is, again, 42 millimeters stainless steel. It actually, I believe this is on, this has a JLC Memovox movement.
It does, yes.
If I'm not mistaken. So you have the GMT at the 6 p.m. You have the two crowns. One's going to be for winding and setting the alarm, which is unbelievable, ungodly loud.
Yeah.
This is a very loud alarm. If you're familiar with any of the Memovox alarms, you know that it's very, very loud. Full stainless steel case. It's going to be full polish, as most of the radio mirrors are. And that's a watch it's going to be a little bit more pricey, even pre-owned, than the Tudor. But in my opinion, you get a better watch. You're going to have a little bit more versatile watch. And vote for me, please. Go ahead.
Yeah, so you guys should vote for me. Better is subjective.
Oh, come on.
I would say, you can't argue that that's an older movement. You know, it's a JLC alarm movement, which is a fantastic movement. But when you look at what you get, the watch is easily $2,000 more expensive, maybe
$1,500 probably, yeah.
The Tudor has a power reserve for the alarm, so you can make sure that it's wound. It also has an on and off indicator, and you can start and stop the alarm from the pusher at the 7 o'clock position. So let's go ahead and pull up the polls. Oh, look at you. You are pulling ahead.
Hey, look at that. I am winning. Last week,
Josh,
I won.
Found a way to vote 9 times,
yes.
Apparently.
Oh, wait. I haven't voted from this computer yet. Hold on. Let me go ahead and do that. Oh, man.
Always fun.
Hey, wait. Let's go ahead and find out. Who won last week, Jason?
I think you won last week.
That's right. And you pretended to throw that one, didn't you?
I don't know if I pretended. But
what about this one? Did you throw this one?
I didn't. I actually really like this watch.
It's cool.
I like both watches.
Mm-hmm.
I am not a big Radimir fan.
Most people aren't. That's true.
If I was going to wear a Radimir, it would be the 1940s case. I prefer that look. But I guess if you like wired lugs, I think this watch has, you know, I would say arguably a better movement in it than most of the older Panerais,
mm-hmm.
with the JLC movement. But they're both cool watches. I just like the Tudor. It's always spoken to me. I never bought one, but I always liked the Advisor. And I think value proposition, like, you know, and that's part of what we're going to talk about,
sure.
later in the show, is
mm-hmm.
like entry level to mid entry level type watches.
Yeah, so. Cool. You know what? I personally would enjoy that Tudor better on a leather strap. I think
it does come in a leather strap option.
Uh-huh. Where it'll wear a little smaller.
The bracelet on this specific, the Advisor, is pretty nice, mm-hmm. but
and it's got a weird name. Like, what are you wearing? I'm wearing an Advisor. Here are my Advisors.
Versus
look at all my
PAM 98.
All my Advisors. Yeah, that's right. PAM 98.
And then why is it a 98? I don't know. Because
who knows? Who
someone
cares?
Randomly assigned these numbers.
Because they have a dartboard with a lot of numbers, and they're just marking them off every time.
All right. So that's our this or that.
All
guys,
right, so
continue
keep voting.
To vote.
Yes, please.
And then hopefully by the end of the show, we can show Josh some defeat.
Yeah. Well, by the way, Zach Blass. Zach Blass says, love it. Love it, but you guys need a theme for each week. Otherwise, it's Panerai versus the world. I mean, we don't always pick. We didn't pick a Panerai last week, did we? You picked the Panerai last week.
Well, yeah. Well, this week, Zach and I happen to agree because the Tudor's better than a Panerai.
I disagree.
And I'm there with you, brother, so I hope you voted for the Tudor.
No, but there is a theme here. Clearly, it's both alarm watches. I mean,
that's
clear. We don't have to point that out.
Alarm watches that don't necessarily break the bank.
Hey, look at that. We got a little graphic there. Cool.
Live chat questions. I've
Sweet
never
guys.
Seen that before. That's cool.
Man, it's very interesting. All right. So keep voting for me throughout the show. If you're related to me, please vote from different computers and different IPs and whatnot, too, as well. So let's go into the main chunk of the show. We have a pretty cool an interesting show this week. We wanted to talk about basically – so me wearing this watch or putting this watch on first, and Jason's talked to me about Seikos in the past, and I've made fun of him, as I like to do, you know, about his – what else? What other Seiko do you have? You have another one that looks like it's some huge thing. It's called a tuna can, isn't it?
I have a baby tuna, which is the 50th anniversary. It's a black and red ceramic bezeled –
tomato
it's
can.
A pretty cool watch. Yeah,
okay. So you have some huge Seiko that I always thought was kind of weird and wonky. But listen, my taste in watches is clearly not the best, seeing as I lose this every week. So I can understand, but you know, once I put this on
– next weekend he's going to ask me to borrow that watch for the weekend.
Yeah, and then, probably will.
Yeah. But so basically, before I cut him off, the idea of the show is we're just going to kind of talk about watches that, you know, maybe once you get past a certain level, you – kind of ignore, you know, like some guys will jump right into a Breitling, get into a Panerai, a Rolex, and then all of a sudden Seikos are too good for you, or Oris is, or stuff like that. So sometimes on the show, we talk about watches that are good value propositions, and we talk about like
Oris,
65, well, no, even the value proposition stuff, like 65 divers. And I can understand if you're here for the Breguets and you're here for the Blancpains and stuff like that, when we start talking about Oris or Hamilton or Tudor,
you
might turn off a little bit. I'm here to tell you that that might not be the case.
Well, you have a lot of experience with those types of watches,
yeah,
right?
So Josh and I have completely opposite paths when it comes to this, right? I came from a retail side of the world.
Right.
And I started selling stuff that was, you know, very cheap.
Sure.
And worked my way all the way up to the, you know, the big stuff. And still enjoy, you know, these pieces. Mm-hmm. And I can see the value proposition from a new perspective, where Josh started selling very high retail watches pre-owned and kind of worked your way into new once we were acquired by Gaberg.
The first watch I ever sold was like an $8,000 Breitling, which now looking back on it, I'm like, how are you going to
And the first watch I ever sold was like a $98 Armatron or something like that.
So yeah, opposite. So in terms of collecting, I went opposite also. My very first watch was a Panerai. I did buy it pre-owned, but it was a watch that held, you know, a pretty good amount of value. It was actually a PAM 380. Was the very first watch I ever bought. I think I spent, you know, probably $3,500 on that watch. Again, very first Swiss watch I ever purchased was a $3,500 Panerai. So in my mind, that was entry level. But in reality, it's probably not. And I wish I had started the other way. And that's what kind of what we wanted to talk about today. So like truly entry level watches. So again, we can get a little bit jaded in this industry when I can walk into a safe and open up a drawer full of Patek's, right? So I see millions of dollars worth of inventory right in front of me and take it for granted. But, you know, if I was, say, you know, in college or maybe during my first job or just getting into Swiss watches and I didn't want to spend, you know, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 watches, you know, maybe I have $1,000, $1,500, $2,000, $2,500 to spend on my first watch. So what does that look like? So let's talk about some of the watches that you had an experience selling, in terms of, you know, good watches, non Invicta watches, but good watches, Seiko watches, you know, Hamilton, Oris, Tag Heuer, watches like that that are like more entry level. So, you know, why don't we talk about that a little bit?
Definitely in the wheelpark of what I, you know, in the ballpark of what I sold. I think hands down the best watch that you can buy for $100, right, is G-Shock.
Yeah.
Casio G-Shock, I don't care who you are. I know watch guys that own Tourbillons that own G-Shocks.
That's right.
All right. And if
only make $5,000 G-Shocks as well.
Yeah, but it doesn't. $100. You buy a G-Shock, it'll last you forever.
It's true.
Until it doesn't, and then you know what? It lasts you 15 years, and you go spend another $100 on a beater watch.
Right.
You know, there's all kinds of classes, but moving up from there.
So that's like a good place to start,
that's
G-Shock,
a phenomenal
if you want to get used
place.
To
So you're a college
a
kid, and you're eating ramen and McDonald's because it's expensive to live, you're buying a G-Shock. Right, you got to get, you know, you need an alarm, you need whatever to get to class on time. You're buying a G-Shock.
But how do you set? That's the question.
What's that?
How do you set a G-Shock? Because nobody knows
any G-Shock.
All right, I'll bring you mine.
It's all here.
guys, send your G-Shocks to Jason if you want them set.
I cannot guarantee that they'll be sent back, but no, I have set many, many, many G-Shocks in my life.
Okay.
But yeah, I think a phenomenal place to go from there. You know, you walk in, you're looking at a watch, maybe let's say the next step up's what, $250 to $500?
Sure. So what's a good watch for $250?
$250, I think you have to start with Tissot.
Really? Okay.
Okay.
Like Tissot's, a T-Touch.
No, T-Touch is, well, at least back in the day when I was selling them, they were $500, $600.
Okay, so a little bit lower than that, yeah.
Yeah, Tissot, I mean, Sapphire Crystal, right? Mm-hmm. Swiss made, albeit mass produced, but Swiss made.
Who owns Tissot? Is it
Swatch Group?
Swatch Group, okay.
Yeah, so Tiso, and then the next step up from that family is going to be like a tie between Hamilton and Mito.
Okay.
But I'd side on the Hamilton side, even though Mito's nice. I like Hamilton better.
So I've never owned a Hamilton. I haven't really seen one that I like. But what's a good Hamilton you think that would be? So if you want to spend $500 on a watch, you want to get a watch that's well made from a manufacturer that has a name that can actually service them. So what's a good Hamilton?
So you can walk in and readily find, well, first of all, Tissot's $250-$500. Mm-hmm. Most of them are going to be quartz. Anything over, let's say, $700-$800, you could probably find an automatic.
Mm-hmm.
The cool thing with Tissot is, with the exception of their pocket watch, every watch they produce has a sapphire crystal.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Good. Yeah.
So next step up, Hamilton.
It's like a khaki is what you're talking about, or what?
So the khaki, which is like a throwback to their original military.
Sure.
You can get for $695 automatic titanium case.
Wow.
Right? Swiss-made sapphire crystal.
Swiss-made sapphire comes on crystal.
Comes on like a light khaki band, like a light green band.
Mm-hmm.
Cool watch. I think they make it in like now in like three or four different sizes.
Mm-hmm.
So anywhere from like a 36 to a 40, I think, with a couple in between. Great watch. The hands down best selling Hamilton is the X-Wind.
The X-Wind? Okay.
Yeah, the X-Wind is a Valjoule 7750 derivative. There's 51s, 52, 53s, different variations, but essentially what it is just automatic chronograph date.
Sure.
And then there's been other versions of the X-Wind that have different
I'm looking at a picture of it here. It's like a sporty-looking watch. It comes on a...
It's like basically their pilot piece.
Their pilot's watch.
It's their best-selling unit in terms of pieces sold, I think, in the history of the company.
Okay.
So it's something that will always stand alone. Yeah, I've had one or two. I've never had a problem. You know, it does definitely have that traditional 7750 wobble.
Sure.
That, like the Panerai love. Yeah, the little wah-wah. But
once it's fully wound.
It's a good watch. And you can buy that watch. You can get whichever one you want, more or less, on pre-owned market. You can find for like $1,200 to $1,500.
Okay.
I think the retail is like $1,500. So even if there's a limited edition that you're tracking down, I mean, so roughly
$1,000 range. I mean,
you can get some really, really good value there. So
a Seiko would kind of be in that same price range or below that.
It depends. So you have
Something like this, right?
Yeah, I mean, something like that. I think retail is like just under $400.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, that watch is probably about $600 right now.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to go buy it on eBay,
that's such a pretty watch.
Look, it was a limited edition. Nobody really knows how many of those were made, but technically, it's a limited edition. So, you know, you got your Seiko guys, and I owe a lot to Seiko because that was kind of my first love, and kind of like that was the first idea of collecting to me.
Sure.
Was buying Seikos and flipping Seikos. So I came up loving Seikos. I still love them. I only have two now, but at some point I think I had like 15 or 16
Seikos. So we were talking about this too. So like most of the watches that we deal in are Swiss watches. And obviously I kind of came into this industry and into this world backwards, right, going from like top to bottom.
Yeah.
And we were talking about like what a Seiko is and what does it mean to you. So like a lot of times whenever we're talking about watches, we like to put it in the context of cars. So like wearing the Seiko to me is like driving a Lexus, right? It's not super exciting to the outside if you've never driven one. It's not exciting. It's kind of on a boring idea, or maybe you want to get a BMW or a Mercedes, something that's going to excite you. But once you get in the Lexus, you sit in it, you drive it, everything kind of makes sense, right? It's comfortable. It's going to be, you know, everything is where it's supposed to be. And it seems like it's very well thought out and sturdy and well made. It doesn't seem like it's ever going to break down. That's exactly how I feel about this watch. Whereas, you know, it feels great on the wrist. It's comfortable. It makes a lot of sense once you put it on. And that's kind of how I feel now about Seiko. And then so for me, it gets me thinking about Grand Seiko too. So now you have
– sure.
Now I'm not only thinking about Swiss watches. I'm thinking about watches from a Japanese manufacturer, which is kind of interesting to me as well. So it opens up
a whole world for me. It kind of opens a floodgate for you. And then like your analogy is kind of – because they're both Japanese. But
right. So it's like that. Of course, yeah.
But Seiko, I mean – you know, I talk to a lot of guys. Obviously, you guys know with what I do with, you know, the guns and knives and stuff like that. It's similar to like a Glock. Like there's some people that love them, but you cannot argue with track record, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing is tested, and Seiko is tested, and they're phenomenal watches. So when I talk to a guy,
some pretty interesting comments going down in this box.
I talk to a guy who has a watch collection box, and it's a 15-400, you know, a CB, Daytona Ceramic. Like, these are guys to me, like, when I see those watches, yeah, they're great watches.
Sure.
You're probably chasing, like, what everybody else thinks is cool. Mm-hmm. But then that same guy will tell me, like, well, I'm not buying a quartz watch. So, or I'm not buying a Seiko. You know,
so the guy who got me on this watch here owns an FP Journe, has an Audemars, has three Rolexes, I believe. So, yeah, so it's not.
And to my point, that's awesome because he recognizes that, you know, maybe that Seiko is cool to him, and for the reason that he likes to watch, not just because he's chasing something.
Exactly.
That somebody
he
else
he's got four or five
cool.
of these watches. So. Yeah. Cool, man. So, okay, so now we were talking about, say, $1,000 to $1,500. If you step up a little bit, you get closer to, say, $15,000 to $2,000. What are we talking now? I guess Auris. Now you can get into a little Tudor.
You're stepping into a little bit of a heavier ballpark. This is where a lot of guys, you know, like a lot of competition is right in that, you know, $1,500 to $3,000 range right before you get to Tudor.
Sure.
So a couple years ago, Tudor was really smart. They stepped right into, like, a $3,000 to $5,000 range, which there was kind of a gap in the market, and now they dominate that space. But yeah, 15 to 2, I would say you're talking Longines.
Longines,
you're talking
for sure.
Auris. You're probably starting to talk about Sunbelt and Ross, you know, like the 123s and the 126s.
That's right.
Depending on whether or not the 126 is probably pre-owned. But Rado is in there. There's quite a few good Rados in that price point.
So let's back it up a little bit. So we say in terms of like Longines, now you're talking about like a Legend Diver, which
Legend
fantastic
Diver.
Watch. I love that watch. You know, you can so you can get a no date Legend Diver
Conquest
for between $1,500 and $2,000, especially pre owned.
Yeah,
yeah, Trick Conquest as well. Longines has a lot of. If you're looking for a good entry-level watch that's going to be, you know, somewhat tradable as well, probably privately tradable, in which most of these watches that we're talking about, guys, are watches that are going to be traded between private owners. There's not a lot for larger dealers to deal in, but those are very easy to move between private owners.
The reason why a dealer won't deal with these watches is a direct representative of why they're good values, because they're an entry-level price point, right? And you get a lot for your money, but what makes it hard for a dealer to turn around and sell that watch is because the watch is such a good value proposition that most people are just going to buy it new.
It's true.
Right? So the pre-owned market on that is weaker, because if you can afford you know, there's more people that are going to be able to afford a $1,000 watch, they'll just go buy it new.
Yeah.
You know, your guy that can't afford a $1,000 watch is not going to buy it for $800 because it's pre-owned.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, just because we don't work with the brand doesn't mean we don't hold high regard for the brand.
That's
like
true.
Seiko a lot, and I can only buy Grand Seiko or like certain Grand Seikos. I can't even buy them all.
Right, as a dealer.
Right,
for
as
business,
a dealer.
Yeah.
Now, you know, personally, I like them a lot. I would wear pretty much every Seiko to some degree. I like a lot of them. But I do kind of prefer the divers, specifically like the SKYs and the Tuna cases.
Gotcha. Cool. So, okay. And so what I want to mention also in this level, if we're progressing through, the Auris 65 is a great option.
Yeah.
If you're looking for your very first good Swiss automatic watch, Auris 65 Diver. Diver 65 is
fantastic.
I've
praised that watch relentlessly on this show, both with Tim and you.
Mm-hmm.
I think the 65 Diver is a great, great piece. I personally like the 42 millimeter version.
Sure.
I like the look of it.
Mm-hmm.
I really dug the Carl Brashear that they came out with. I don't necessarily care for the sector dial of like the smaller version, but the 42 and all the flavors, specifically there's a dark green dial, which I like quite a bit, and the blue one.
Anything with a green dial nowadays is
awesome.
Fantastic.
And
so these are also like, so again, entry level watches. If you want to spend, you know, your first, spend some decent money on a watch, not spend, you know, $10 on a watch in a mall, you want to put like $1,000, $1,500, $2,000 into a watch. These are great watches that, again, are going to hold some amount of value. If you want to do sell them on eBay or wherever it may be, you're going to get some value back for it. So you can get into the trading world with these. And also, these are good, well-made watches that can be serviced, right?
Yeah. And then the next watch that I think that's coming out that I've already seen a lot of people asking about, but when it was announced, I knew it was going to be a big hit, is the new 58, the Tudor 58 Black Bay.
Oh, that's right.
That's got a very big vintage appeal to it, which all Tudors kind of do, but specifically it's supposed to harken back to like a romance with a dive watch. It's very similarly themed to the Diver 65 from Auris.
So, but now you're up a little bit in the price range.
Yeah, you're going to be up in price range, but I'm just saying keep your eyes open for it because it's going to be a hot watch in the next 6 months or so.
So but that would be a good, like, if you want it, if a guy's got some money in his pocket, he wants to get into watches and he wants to get into something that's going to be wearable, that's going to be versatile, and, you know, hold some sort of value, but it'd be, like, you know, considered an entry level, that'd be a good piece to start.
The 58 also serves a little bit more of a purpose because for some people, the Black Bay is too big.
Yeah.
And the 58's a little smaller.
It's too big for me, the Black Bay is.
Yeah, I like the size of the Black Bay. I think it's too thick.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't sit flush on my wrist. Whereas, again, this thing, unbelievably flush on my wrist. Doesn't
so
make sense.
After owning, because you guys know I have a non-date ceramic sub, after owning that watch, the Black Bay just seems too thick.
Mm-hmm.
But before I owned that watch, I was all about wanting a Black Bay. But I'm spoiled.
We're getting a lot of comments about being truck drivers today. I did realize that, we're both wearing, plaid button-downs.
Today's Plaid Friday.
And you're wearing a hat.
If you guys aren't wearing plaid while watching this show, I'm extremely disappointed. Everybody knows you wear plaid on Fridays.
That's a funny joke, Jason.
I just made that up, but...
it's a hilarious joke, Jason, that you just
made. We can tell by your very dry sense of humor.
Okay, all right. So it's a 2,000 to 2,500, you're getting into some of the, some nicer Tudor watches. Also, now you're fully into the Bell & Ross world, right? You can get a Bell & Ross for, less than $3,000. You should be able to find some Bell & Ross. Also, Tag Heuer, too. So, a lot of people like to, crap on Tag. I personally like Tag, some Carreras. I like some of the Aqua Racers as well. There's one Aqua Racer that I love. If anybody has it out there, it's a Caribbean dial, so it has like a map. Yeah, nobody does. It has the map of the Caribbean, which includes Florida. So if you have that watch in all steel, reach out to me. I'd be interested in purchasing it from you. That'd be anybody out there.
For $500. No, I'm just kidding.
Listen, I'll pay market price for it.
So
Tag Heuer, then you're getting into that level. I'd say be careful with, once you get into the larger manufacturers, be careful on how much you pay for some of those watches because, if you're hoping to start trading, you don't want to make the biggest mistake as your first purchase.
Here's a rule of thumb. If you're buying something for, let's call it $2,000. Mm-hmm. Under $2,000, you really like that watch and you're buying it for you. And without doing a lot of homework, you're not going to flip that watch.
No.
Right? So unless you're buying something that you know a lot about and they normally sell for $3,000 and you're buying it for $2,000 and you're getting a good deal, it's just like anything. You got to do your homework, which is what we always say.
Francis Torres with the Breitling Aerospace. Absolutely.
Yeah,
I think that was the second Swiss watch I ever purchased, and I'll never sell that watch. I got mine. I have the Aerospace the Professional, and mine's a 40.
The white dial.
Yeah, 42 millimeter white dial. I put it on a blue strap with a deployant. I'm obsessed with that watch. I love that. It always feels
that's
good
a great
on
watch.
The wrist. Yeah. Never get tired
I want to. So I saw we have a new, Bell might have been here before, and I just never saw it. But Bell and I just got acquainted, and we actually did a deal together just recently. And he's in the comments, and he's asking a question. Jason, do you think the Tudor Black Bay ETA movements will be going up in value? And we are, in fact, already kind of seeing the ETAs bringing a little bit more money than they were 6 months, 8 months ago.
That's true.
I personally, and I've said this before with Tim, the Black Bay ETA Black, right, was the... So you had the red, the blue, and the black.
Sure.
The black was the last one released.
Mm-hmm.
It was only ran for about 12 to 18 months, so it has the least amount of runtime of any Black Bay ever produced of the newer current generation. So I would say Black Bay, black bracelet with an ETA movement, if I was going to go out and buy one now, unless you already own that configuration, I think that's the one to have.
Sure.
The ETA movements are just awesome. I think they're, when you go back and you look at which Rolexes are worth money now, it's always the cleaner dial.
Mm-hmm.
It's always the one that just is simpler.
The least
which
polarizing.
Which the ETA Black Bays are just a cleaner dial. They're a little more romantic. They don't have all the badging. So I think that's part of it. And then the movement is just rock solid. So.
Sure. No, I agree with that. So in terms of ETA movement, why do we think that those things are going to last over time is because they made them for so long, right? And, one thing is that they're always going to be serviceable and that you should easily be able to get, parts for these watches always,
And
there's so many guys out there who know how to work on
them. Well, the ETA movements are like putting Legos together, right? And a regular watchmaker is, with a sophisticated movement is like surgery where... basic watchmakers that are starting to train, they learn on ETA movements because they're bulletproof.
Sure.
So
I gotcha.
We did, I did want to, before we run too far into this conversation, we have some pictures queued up of our next subject, and I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about this because we
hopefully we have enough time to do this. Yeah.
We talked about entry level. We talked about like kind of the process of going through some buying stuff, right?
Sure,
so
yeah.
Once, you know, like I said, let's call it under $2,000, you're buying that watch because you love it. And then after that, right, we're starting to talk about watches that you can flip and watches that are truly investments.
Perfect segue. So Pilot Style 123 says that there's been repeated reports of Black Bay Pepsis being defective over lubrication of the date wheel. Do we have any information on that? So this is actually pretty interesting that you bring this up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we want to talk a little bit, do a short segment on manufacturer warranties and what exactly is a manufacturer warranty, what does it cover, and, you know, the dangers of spending a lot of money on something that you're going to be wearing every day that can very easily be destroyed, right?
Right.
So in a situation such as that, if you see a watch, first of all, I have not heard any of that yet. Have you heard anything?
Shipped two of the new GMT Pepsis,
sure.
Or if you want to call them Pepsis, they're more like black, like more like Cokes.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't had a problem. So
okay, but I mean they've only been out there for a week.
Yeah, I mean they seem to be cool. I think the number one thing a lot of people are talking is just the color of the bezel, but that's kind of a design
a little bit
thing.
Exactly. But, people get used to that. So what we're saying is if there's a situation such as that where there's a defective part in the movement or over lubrication, whatever it may be. Okay, so
we're
going
to jump straight ahead to the photos.
No worries, but no, it's fine. We'll go right into this. So you're going to have situations where the manufacturer will absolutely cover that, right? So things that are not covered by a manufacturer warranty, and most guys who are watching this show might know this already. So, just bear with us a little bit because we want to talk about the difference between what's covered by a manufacturer warranty and what's not, and kind of what some watch companies who are resellers and also retailers are doing to help protect customers from things like what you're seeing here, and we can explain what happened here, right? So if there's a watch coming from the factory that's over-lubricated, obviously that's a watch that's going to be covered by warranty. Is that right, Jason?
Yeah. So in a situation like that, basically, so the manufacturer's warranty is going to cover anything internal.
Defects.
That's manufacturer's defect.
Right.
Now, does that cover something internal after you drop the watch? No.
Nope.
Right? So kind of the fallacy of the warranty program provided by manufacturers is that as long as it's internal, it's not my fault.
Right.
But
not true.
Not true. So no. In a situation where the photos you just saw, this is a relatively new watch. This watch looked gorgeous
mm-hmm.
when it was shipped to the client. This gentleman went into the water with the crown guard open,
mm-hmm.
which, to be honest, I mean, that's kind of tough to do with the Panerai
mm-hmm.
Because you have that cam lever system.
Oh, it was only open for like a minute or so.
Yeah, so this
filled
watch
with water.
Filled with salt water.
Mm-hmm.
And
then within 3 days, this is what it looked like.
So we have a really, really tough shot of the movement in this piece. This watch is gone.
Yeah, it's done. So very interesting. Yeah. If you guys are familiar with my watch, the watch that I wear, my PAM 002, it is about 21 years old, and it looks like that. It took about 21 years for it to get that way. This guy, 3 days of owning this watch, rusted the watch from the inside. So
kind of the interesting thing here is what happens is there's, as we approach, like I was talking about before, $2,000, $4,000, as you approach that level where now this is not play money,
mm-hmm.
right? Now it's like, okay, I'm getting into this hobby and I'm spending some serious money. How do you protect that investment?
Sure.
So there's lots of companies. This is not new. I sold this when we were in Torno.
Sure.
For many, many years. It's very successful. We do it as well at Godberg.
Right.
And
it's something new
Box,
for us and not, for a lot of companies.
Yeah. What you're seeing is as the pre-owned market becomes more predominant,
mm-hmm.
right, and people are starting to recognize this is a huge space. And
sure.
there's no denying that with all these companies vying to get into the pre-owned industry, buying up other companies to slide into this, position,
mm-hmm.
which, we're kind of at the forefront of because we've been doing this for so long. We're offering, these type of warranties. And so this would be something that you would pay extra for,
mm-hmm.
but covers physical damage.
Sure.
Right? Covers you drop the watch, you break the watch. Doesn't matter what happens to the watch. Physical damage,
mm-hmm.
where the manufacturer's warranty is only going to cover internal defect.
Sure.
So the manufacturer put it together wrong. And let's be honest, these things are made so well
mm-hmm.
that the percentage that happens that a manufacturer's watch is bad is relatively low considering how many units they send out. So 90% of the time, maybe more than that, 95% of the time,
mm-hmm.
it's your fault.
Yeah. And even if it's not, it's up to – so If you send the watch to the manufacturer, it's up to a watchmaker that you've never met before. You'll never have contact with. He'll decide whether or not it's your fault or not.
Right.
So if you don't, if you have a relationship with a dealer, maybe you can have them push, or it's something that you can kind of work on in order to get them to cover it, even if it is your fault. But realistically, you know, you're kind of, you know, SOL. So one thing that we want to talk about exactly what we said before is that, you know, should you be looking for what they call like a buckle-to-buckle warranty, and, you know, how important is that? I'd say that for watches over $5,000 or $10,000, I'd say that's something that you should seriously look at. So, again, like we've partnered with a company. Tourneau has it. I think Mayer's in Florida, they have a buckle-to-buckle. So, again, you're going to be paying a small percentage of your purchase price, and you're going to have the watch totally covered, right? So, I mean, they don't even – I mean, it's like car insurance, but – But even more so.
Because, I mean, you don't put a car on your wrist and wave it around.
Look at that.
I think
the show's over.
Yeah, they're turning the lights off. It's Friday night. So, you don't buckle a car to your wrist and wave it around all day long. So,
exactly.
You know, it's going to be more prone to impact, stuff like that. But buckle to buckle is really good. The one cool thing with buckle to buckle on maybe like a cheaper price point, because Josh said five and over, is if you're going to buy that watch to like really beat on it, then it makes sense to
like
buy the warranty
because
you're covered. Yeah, right. Well, you're just tough on everything.
I mean, I've had to replace countless crystals on my watches. I've had refinishing all those things. All right, cool, guys. Well, listen, it is Friday night. I think
look at this poll.
I'm still winning. Oh, no.
Pulling ahead.
All
right. People starting to realize that Tudor's a better watch.
Have you voted yet? All right, please log onto your phone and vote.
All right, guys,
dude.
We're going to call it. That's a Friday night wrap. This was a fun show for me. I like just, you know, talking about stuff that
Clive
doesn't mean
is claiming
anything.
That I am a moon phase. Did we pay the bills? Not yet. You haven't called me and bought a watch yet. All right, buddy. So, all right, guys, so listen, as always, please click subscribe, tell all your friends, your family, all acquaintances on the street to subscribe, follow us on Instagram. Our company Instagram is Watchbox Global. We also have Gottberg Jewelers. Mine is Mr. Thanos, MR, my last name, Thanos. His
Evo
is terrible.
X4B11.
Right,
Thank you.
Yeah, try to find that. You won't. Follow us on Pinterest, on MySpace, on Foursquare, on Friendster, on LinkedIn, on Grubhub, on Uber. Yeah? Uber as well. All right, guys. Again, thank you so much. And, oh, yeah. Before we forget, we'll talk about it next week. All right. See you later. Bye-bye.